As a teenage boy, I quite literally experienced the rough end of the stick from my grandma. Though elderly at the time and no more than 5 foot tall, Granny D had been a farmer and was a lot stronger than she looked. On occasion, she would sit in her armchair, tapping her stick in a menacing way, looking at me. Getting past her was a little bit like running the gauntlet. Just when I thought I'd got by, I would feel this stinging pain on the back of my legs. And turning in shock and pain, I would see Granny D innocently whipping her stick back into place before calmly proclaiming, "If you don't deserve it now, you will later." Now, whilst my parents were aware of the injustice of this action, the only comfort they would offer me after my regular complaints was that this was somehow character building. I could think of far more pleasant ways to develop character. Well, Proverbs tells us that character or wisdom comes from the fear of God, not the fear of Granny. So what is the difference between being clever and being wise? It is said that a clever person knows what to say, while a wise person knows whether to say it or not. See, wisdom goes beyond knowledge. It's more than just knowing facts. It's about understanding life. It's about acquiring the skill of intuition to make good decisions. It's about the art of living. You know, we can be smart, but never become wise. And Proverbs exhorts us to pursue wisdom. Personified as a woman, Lady Wisdom says in Proverbs 8:35, "Whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord." Now, Proverbs' central theme is the call to live life in awe of God. It opens with a call in Proverbs 1, chapter 1, verse 7. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom," and closes along the same lines in Proverbs 31, 30. And you see this in the passage that was read to us just now. "The fear of the Lord is to be praised." But integral to this book is also a call to live life well in the workplace. And the rationale of the author is that a healthy respect for God will lead to good character, which will in turn lead to good workplace practice. And it is that very logic that is at work in these verses before us this lunchtime. Lady Wisdom, who you recall we met at the beginning of Proverbs, here reappears in street clothes as a living, breathing woman, termed the noble woman. And some translations use wife instead of woman, probably because the woman's husband and children are mentioned in this passage. But the Hebrew word translates as either wife or woman. And actually, the text focuses on the woman's work as an entrepreneur. The passage itself not only applies to the workplace, but actually is set at work. Now, it probably came as a surprise to some in the ancient Near East, and even to some now, of portraying a woman as a model of wise business practice. And yet, you'll recall from Genesis 1 and 2 that God gave the gift of work to men and women equally. And here, Lady Wisdom functions in the book as an affirmation of the dignity of every person's work, whether male or female. What I would like us to do is briefly to look at three sets of practices that this lady employs in the workplace. So the first attribute of this wise worker is that she can be trusted, that she is trustworthy. Now, it goes without saying that when trust is lost between colleagues or an employee and an employer, it makes for a very difficult workplace. And you all know what I'm talking about. Sadly, it is the reality
of everyday life. In a competitive workplace, people are always trying to get ahead, and many will be dishonest in that ambition. And yet the lady in these verses would not condone such sharp practice. She is honest in her dealings with people, beginning with her own family. So in verse 11, we see there that her husband respects her, that he trusts her, that he has full confidence in her. Trust, as we know, is the foundation, isn't it, of a working relationship. Indeed, trust is the foundation of any relationship. And when trust is gone, the relationship can become and just become purely functional. And one is always, particularly within the workplace, watching your own back. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, we see there that God created people to work in harmony with one another. And without trust, this is simply not possible. Trust requires a devotion to ethical principles, beginning with faithfulness, loyalty in our relationships. So what are the workplace implications of being trustworthy depicted in this passage? Well, the first one, the first requirement of trustworthiness is that our work brings good to those who trust us. The woman works not only for herself, but also for the benefit of those around her. So her work benefits her customers, verse 14, her community, verse 20, her immediate family, verse 12 and 28, and her co-workers, verse 15. And in the economy of the ancient Near East, these spheres of responsibility all come together in the economic unit known as the household. And as in much of the world today, most people then worked in the same place they lived. Some household members worked as cooks, cleaners, caregivers, others as workers of fabric, stone, wood. Others still worked out in the fields, immediately outside as farmers, shepherds or laborers. So the household here refers to the whole complex of productive enterprise, as well as to the extended family and employed workers. As the manager of a household, this noble woman is much like a modern-day executive, senior executive. When she watches over the affairs of the household, verse 27, she is fulfilling her duty of trust to all those who depend on her enterprise. Now, this does not mean we cannot also work for our own benefit. The noble woman's duty to her household is reciprocated by their duty to her. It is proper for her to receive a share of the household profit. The end of the passage instructs her children, you'll see, and her husband and the whole community to honor and praise her. So in verse 28-31 we read, her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband too, and he praises her. Give her a share in the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the city gates. Our calling to be trustworthy in the workplace requires that we must not do our employers harm in the pursuit of our own personal gain. We may dispute with them, we may struggle against their treatment of us, but we must not work them harm. For example, we may not steal from them or slander our employers in order to air our grievances. We must not destroy our employers' property or falsely accuse them. We also need to think very carefully about the influence that trips or free gifts might have on the way that we decide to distribute business to certain suppliers. I could give numerous other examples of the way that we should behave, but the point is that our duty of trust is absolutely crucial to the way that we act as an employee. Incidentally, but just as importantly, we must apply these same principles to our clients. I don't know if anybody here charges by the hour. Do any of you do that? I remember as a young solicitor to actually bill 5 chargeable hours, I thought was rather impressive.
until I came across Americans who were billing 8-9 hours. And I was intrigued, how did they do that? Until one of my American friends said to me, Johnny, you need to learn to bill in the shower. All people are tempted to serve themselves at the expense of others. People are also tempted to do as little as they can at work. But the noble woman says, secondly, that a wise worker is hardworking. Laziness in the workplace is destructive. If you've experienced lazy co-workers, you will appreciate this pungent proverb. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so are the lazy to those who send them. You know, there is no substitute in life for hard work. Employees love to hire employees who are self-motivated and work hard. Everyone you'll talk to will say, you know, that they work hard. And yet, from my experience as an employee and an employer, few are the number who keep on working really hard after they've been at the job for a while. And those who do generally get promoted. Employers have to often dangle a carrot in front of employees to motivate them to work hard. And it might be the offer of a future promotion, a bonus, or some other perk. But what should motivate you to work hard? Well, let me suggest a couple of things. Firstly, for your own well-being. You'll see again that the noble woman works with eager hands, verse 13. Meaning that she chooses to work tirelessly in pursuit of the household's or the business's goals. She gets up while it is still night, verse 15. She makes linen garments and sells them, verse 24. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard, verse 16. It adds up, doesn't it, to a lot of work. And ultimately, work brings satisfaction. It's actually only when you're out of work or retired that you realize how much you missed it. God designed us to work. In a rural economy like the one that we have here, the connection between hard work and well-being is very easy to see. As long as they have access to land to cultivate, hard-working farmers do much better than lazy ones. In the ancient Near East, hard work brought prosperity. But even 1 week of laziness during the harvest could spell a hungry winter. In a modern economy, we can easily mask the effect of this in the short term. In good times when virtually everyone can find work, the lazy worker may have a job and appear to be doing nearly as well as the diligent worker. Likewise, in economic downturns like we have currently, a hard-working person may have no more success than a lazy one in finding a job. And yet, diligence is usually rewarded over the course of a working life. When jobs are scarce, it is the diligent workers who are most likely to keep their jobs and who are most likely to find new ones. Secondly, our chief motivation for hard work is it's not personal satisfaction or personal prosperity, but for the well-being of our God, or out of awe of the Lord. We are diligent first and foremost in the workplace because the Lord calls us to be so. In our job, we work to the glory of God, not man. He is our higher boss who calls us to work in a way that speaks loudly of the new life that we have in Jesus. So the wise worker is trustworthy, is hardworking, and finally, let us notice that she is generous-hearted. In verse 20 there, we see that the wise worker is generous. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. And we're used to hearing generosity praised in the Bible. And here, this executive is praised for it. But we must be careful not to reduce her generosity down just to a pleasant quirk in her personality. Her generosity is part and parcel of her work. And we can see this in the relationship between verses 19 and 20. And there you read, in her hand she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. In these two verses, the author is using a literary device to show that her work
is inseparable from her generosity. She puts her hand to the spinning wheel, and in the next breath, she is opening her hand to the needy. Because she is successful in spinning, she has something to give to the poor. Conversely, her generous spirit is an essential element of her capability as an executive. Generosity and business enterprise do not conflict. Being generous to an employee or to the needy out of the household's resources does not reduce the owner's wealth, but often increases it. It's a counterintuitive argument, which actually you frequently hear in the States, but rarely hear in the UK. But it's integral to Proverbs. You see, most people curb their generosity out of fear that if they give away too much, they will not have enough left for themselves. But the Proverbs teach the exact opposite. Listen to Proverbs 11, verses 24 and 25. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. And when we think of God's generosity in Jesus to us, is it hardly surprising that we are to mirror a generous heart to those who employ us and to those we employ? Our work habits are shaped by our character, which stems from a healthy relationship with God. As we come to know the Lord more intimately, our character is transformed to become more like God's. Indeed, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And wisdom brings life to all spheres of this world. Let wisdom lead you to trustworthy actions, to hard work and generosity of spirit in the workplace. Amen.